Hello and welcome to the Archaeology News Weekly. I'm David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details in each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now, the main headlines from around the world are as follows. Rock carvings have been found in Scotland after a great storm. The ancient Minoan culture is coming to life in New York. And natural gas drilling threatens ancient rock art in Utah. There's a story about digging of megalithic tombs being planned in the Channel Islands. And the oldest African human sacrifices have been discovered in Sudan. Prehistoric site is unearthed underneath a British church. And we've got news on excavation work on a Neolithic settlement in Egypt. There is a replica of an ancient boat that will be floating again across the channel, and migrating people to the New World had a 20,000-year-old stopover holiday. And with climate change, a new culture bloomed in Peru. A rock carving dating back to the Bronze Age has been uncovered by Scottish forestry workers clearing trees which were felled during a recent storm. The mysterious rock art had been hidden by a huge tree in the Forestry Commission Scotland's Achnabreak Forest in West Argyll until it was blown down around 3 weeks ago. The carvings, believed to be around 5,000 years old, is of a dice-like pattern. It sits above the mouth of the Kilmartin Glen and directly overlooks the rock art at Cairnban. Its proximity to these other rock art sites and its similar complexity of design suggest that all three sites may be connected. Andy Bunton of the Forestry Commission said that they discovered the new rock art during a routine inspection. The importance of the site and the reasons for the carvings remain a topic of speculation, and despite public and academic interest, the meanings of the symbols remain mysterious. On March the 13th, 2008, more than 280 artefacts from the ancient land of Crete, most of which have never been shown outside of Greece, will be on view at the Onassis Cultural Centre in New York in the USA. From the Land of the Labyrinth, Minoan Crete, is the name of the exhibition, and it will feature a wide range of rare objects revealing the history of Crete's Minoan civilization, the first fully developed culture to establish itself on European soil. On view through to September the 13th, 2008, the exhibition uses ancient artefacts and works of art to reveal aspects of daily life in the Minoan civilization, including social structure, communications, bureaucratic organization, religion, and technology. The exhibition will piece together the culture's past with objects such as gold jewelry deposited in the rich tombs of the elite, the inscribed clay tablets that disclose the fundamentals of the Minoan economy, and ceremonial vessels found in the palaces and tombs. They also have votive figures of clay, and on loan exclusively from the archaeological museums in Crete, in collaboration from the Hellenistic Ministry of Culture, this will make an absolutely amazing exhibition. So if you're in New York, I will get myself along to have a look at this. Eastern Utah's Nine Mile Canyon holds more than 10,000 known American Indian rock art images, but they will be no match for 800 gas wells. A Denver-based energy company's proposal to drill at least that many wells on the West Tavaputs Plateau threatens the 1,000-year-old Anasazi ruins, where dust and chemicals are already corroding unequaled rock art. The Bill Barrett Corporation wants to drill some of those wells in wilderness study areas and critical habitats for deer, elk and sage-grouse, as well as operate year-round instead of laying off for the winter, as has been the tradition, to accommodate wildlife needs. The U.S. Bureau of Land Management has issued a draft environmental impact study of Bill Barrett's development plan and acknowledges a potential harm to the wildlife, air quality and scenery. But it was the ongoing and potential harm to the archaeological treasures that's prompted the most public concern in the early days of the environmental analysis. Nine Mile Canyon supposedly is protected under the Federal Antiquities Act, and already among fewer than 70 comparable wonders listed on the Bureau of Land Management's National Backcountry Byway System. But Bill Barrett holds the leases, and those leases come with rights to explore and develop a minimum of one well for each parcel. The company estimates that the project could yield around 1 trillion cubic feet of gas during more than 3 decades of drilling, when the big rigs, which could make hundreds of trips every week for more than 3 decades up and down the narrow canyon road. The agency already knows that one of the biggest problems is dust and the chemicals used to tamp it down. Road maintenance crews have been spraying heavy quantities of magnesium chloride on the dirt road since development of West Tavaputs geared up about 5 years ago. Magnesium chloride controls the dust, but also clings to adjacent rock and attracts moisture from the air. The chemical can eat concrete. A typical 30% concentration freezes at 1 degree Fahrenheit. When that happens, the rock and the art carved into it expands and crumbles to nothing. That art is irreplaceable, and no one even knows exactly how many sites are jeopardized because there's never been a full archaeological study undertaken. A BLM commissioned study of the problem suggested one solution might be to use recycled asphalt to pave sections of the road. But Pam Miller, a professional archaeologist who chairs the 9 Mile Canyon Coalition Board of Directors, said the group had no position on whether to pave the roads, which would require elaborate engineering and even more big trucks to bring in the paving material. She adds that it's kind of silly to say that you can pave the road near the rock art panels when they don't even know where they are yet. In the meantime, trucks continue to roll, kicking up the dust, which could bury and destroy the art forever. Archaeological work is to be carried out on Herm in the Channel Islands. Professor Chris Scar has already undertaken work on Jethu, plans to examine the megalithic tombs on the larger island. The professor is a specialist on the prehistory of Western Europe and has a particular interest in the archaeology of the Channel Islands. He's already been given a £135,000 grant to explore the buried prehistoric land surface of Herm. The Arts and Humanities Research Council grant will fund the 2-year project beginning this summer. Well, I think I know who to go to when I'm going to be continuing on the Cowsland Big Dig in about a week's time. French archaeologists in Sudan say they have uncovered the oldest proof of human sacrifice in Africa, hailing the discovery as the biggest Neolithic find of the continent for years. The tomb of a 5,500-year-old man surrounded by 3 sacrificed humans, 2 dogs and exquisite ceramics were exhumed north of Khartoum by Neolithic expert Jacques Reynaud and his 66-year-old Austrian wife. The archaeologist who's led the excavations for several months described the tomb as the most important Neolithic find in Africa since the 1990s. Close to the Nile and highly fertile, the El Kada area north of modern town of Shendi could have been a highly favourable location for Neolithic settlers. The French team said the urns, materials used to grind wheat into flour, beads and bracelets were also uncovered at the site, and they will all be donated to the National Museum in Khartoum. Work on a church in northeast England has revealed that the site may have been used for ritual and worship for thousands of years. Major refurbishment work on the Grade 1 listed St Michael and All Angels Church in Hoghtonlea Spring, Tyne and Wear, began last month. The church, dating back to Norman times, is the oldest building in the town. But investigation by archaeologists has revealed whinstone boulders under the church, which are thought to have been part of an early prehistoric burial cairn or ritual site. A line of similar boulders has been found under the churchyard wall. Archaeologist Peter Ryder of Riding Mill in Northumberland said it looks like a prehistoric site. They can't think of any other reason why there would be these large boulders, and especially underneath the church. Under the central tower of the church, which was restored around 1350, the work has already uncovered huge Roman stones thought to have come from a Roman temple. It's believed that it was often the practice that important pagan ritual or worship sites were taken over by subsequent religions. They have so far found more than they ever expected when the work began. The Reverend Derek Newton, associate priest of the church, said the finds would be part of the Houghton Heritage Centre, which will be created in the church as part of the £1 million refurbishment project. Although the finds have delayed the work slightly, this has been a great adventure and everyone has enjoyed what has been revealed. I remember something very similar when I was working at a site in Yorkshire at Snettisham, where the church sat upon several layers of ritual sites stretching right back again into the Neolithic. At the site known as Zed Basin on the north shore of Lake Caron, an archaeological and geological team from University College of Los Angeles and Rijksuniversiteit Groningen stumbled upon what is believed to be the most complete Neolithic settlement ever found in Fayoum in Egypt. The discovery was made when the team was surveying the site to study fluctuations in the lake level, which caused artifacts to either be covered with meters of sediment or dramatically displaced by erosion. The site was previously excavated in 1925 by Gertrude Canton Thompson, who found several Neolithic remains. This time the magnetic survey revealed that the settlement was much larger than expected and that the area excavated by Thompson was only a fraction of the site. An assessment made of the site focused on determining the exact boundaries by comparing satellite photographs with the results of the magnetic survey in the southwest and northeast of the town, as well as at the cemetery at the north side of the Cairo-Fayoum Road. The main purpose of the magnetic survey was to better understand the archaeological and zooarchaeological remains at Caranis in a well-excavated context, as well as understanding the life and economic activities of the people who lived there at Caranis. Based on the 3,500-year-old vessel discovered beneath Dover town centre in England 16 years ago, a replica boat lashed together from planks of wood, waterproof with beeswax and moss, will set sail again in 2010, giving archaeologists a glimpse into the lives of the Bronze Age seafarers carrying up to 10 men to France. It's being built by the Canterbury Archaeological Trust, and researchers hope the voyage will help them glean invaluable information about how our ancestors conquered the sea. The venture will also help archaeologists understand how the people in Dover lived more than 3 millennia ago. The ancient vessel was discovered by accident in 1992 when Keith Parfitt from the Trust noticed an unusual piece of wood in the trench dug as part of roadworks in Dover. It became clear that this was a small part of a much larger boat which had been preserved under the busy port town for thousands of years. The boat is almost 10 meters long and 2.5 meters wide, made by lashing oak timbers together with cords of yew wood. Moss and beeswax were then stuffed between the joints to make them watertight. Archaeologists studying the find suspect the ancient boat could have been used to trade across the channel. Only an experiment such as this will show whether this was possible. The replica will sail from Folkestone to Wissant in France in 2010, crewed by volunteers from the British Dragon Boat Association. After arriving in France, it is to become part of a travelling exhibition about the Golden Age of Europe 3,500 years ago. Though if I could ask the people when they pop across to France if they could just bring me back a couple of bottles of wine in the duty-free. Thanks very much. People who migrated from Asia to the New World camped out for 20,000 years on land now submerged under the Bering Strait between Alaska and Siberia, according to a new genetic analysis. Yes, it's that time of the year again when we're getting a new analysis of how the Americas were populated. A team at the University of Florida combined studies of DNA, archaeological evidence, climate data and geological data to come up with their new theory, which describes a much longer migration than most other researchers had proposed. Anthropologist Connie Mulligan and her team proposes that the people who left Central Asia to eventually populate the Americas passed quickly through Siberia and then got stuck in Beringia, a former landmass that now lies under the frigid Bering Sea. There they stayed for 20,000 years until glaciers melted about 15,000 years ago, opening up a route to the Americas. The reason there's no archaeological evidence for that occupation is that the area is now under the sea. The researchers used sequences of mitochondrial DNA taken from Asians and Native Americans for their analysis. This type of DNA is passed along virtually unchanged from mother to child. The small mutations that occur can be used as a genetic clock to track the descent and sizes of ancient populations. After a long period of little change in population size in Greater Beringia, Amerinds, or American Indians or Native Americans, rapidly expand into the Americas less than 15,000 years ago, either through an interior ice-free corridor or along the coast. This rapid colonization of the New World was achieved by a founder group with an effective population size of only 1,000 to 5,000 individuals. The University of Florida, Michael Miyamoto's, said the DNA suggests a 20,000-year-old waiting period during which generations passed and genetic changes accumulated. By looking at the kinds and frequencies of the mutations in the modern populations, we can get an idea of when the mutations arose and how many people were around to carry them. If you think about it, these people didn't know that they were going to a new world. They were moving out of Asia and finally reached a landmass which was exposed because of the lower sea levels during the last glacial maximum. But two major glaciers blocked their progress into the new world, so they stayed put for about 20,000 years. It wasn't a paradise, but they survived, and when the North American ice sheet started to melt and a passage into the new world opened, on they went. You can find more about this study at www.plosone.com. That's PLOSONE.org/DOI/PONE.0001596. Along the coast of Peru, a mysterious civilization sprang up about 5,000 years ago. This was many centuries before the Incan Empire. Yet these people were sophisticated. They cultivated crops and orchards and built huge monuments of earth and rock. Archaeologists are trying to prove that an abrupt change of climate created this new culture. The culture, as yet, has no official name. It flourished in a series of dry coastal valleys called Norte Chico. The place is desolate and misty, a place of rock and dirt, so what drove people to settle here is something that archaeologist Jonathan Haas of the Field Museum in Chicago has been puzzling over for years. He doesn't know exactly why they built the mounds, but he has discovered in Norte Chico. But he has been working on the problem since he made some unusual finds 8 years ago. Little pieces of seashell. Fishermen who had come up from the coast about 10 miles away had brought shellfish, but why? Early Americans, hunters and gatherers, came here to fish and collect mussels and clams, and that worked fine until around 3000 BCE. At around 3000 BCE, the environment begins to change. El Niño, the cycle of warm ocean water and torrential rains that regularly descends on Western South America, had changed, and some shift in the coupling of the atmosphere and the Pacific Ocean made El Niños more frequent, and it had a drastic effect on coastal life. Well, I hope we hear more about Jonathan Hassey's studies when he has a little bit more to go on there. Anyway, as you probably guessed from my croaky voice, I have been suffering from what we call in Britain man flu, which is much more serious than normal flu, which I think women get. That's why I'm afraid my voice is croaky and the news is a bit later this week. However, I have survived and I will be back again next week. Before then, can I remind you that many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities are appearing on a brand new Badger, www.bajr.org, which includes videos, podcasts, and other exciting things, including games. And more can always be found on Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. Thanks very much for listening. I hope to see you again next week.